You get it, Jim? Carolyn?
Yes, I'm sorry, Rob. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay, good.
I haven't been on the computer.
All right, I'll bring them up anyway verbally. I just thought it'd be helpful to have just the notes. Just brief, very brief, about 4 points. I'll take them up.
Rabbi, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jim.
The third point, I'm not sure of the relevance of it, and I guess the reason I say that is because I don't think that that indicates that there's some unplanned for some necessary result that God didn't necessarily care about. If he had drawn up, say, blueprints ahead of time in the way that a person doesn't, and obviously he doesn't, I don't mean to say that he does, but he would have already foreseen, for example, the six, he could have set things, these snowflakes of six sides at that point before it was physical.
Or it could be, there's nothing saying that it can't be that it's a necessary result. I mean, we'll go into it, but once you say certain properties exist, and let's say you have two different objects, and then you introduce motion, which causes the two objects to join or touch. So based on the properties that exist already, there's going to be a certain result. Now, you don't have to say that the result was designed, because that was already part of the property of the object to begin with. And that's why I'll use the spinning, we'll do a spinning sphere, and hopefully we can illustrate that. I'm not saying the three is, these are just quickly, I put them down, so don't necessarily read three as a proper sequence of notes, okay? I'm just putting them down basically so I have a reference to bring them up. We'll see if we can, we'll take out the points one by one and see if we can wrap our heads around it.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Morning, Doug.
How are you?
Good. I actually just sent an email out to the Noahide list, just with the points and something, part of what you sent to me last night. So I just want to use it as a reference point for, you know, the continuing discussion today. Let me know when we should start.
Good to go.
Okay. Rivka, are you there? She joined you? Okay, so we'll get back into it. All right, so we were discussing the issue of whether God wills things of all events that we see, excluding human interaction, where human will is there. So is everything that we witness in the physical world being, is it God's will? Or do we call it something else of nature? That there are laws in effect and God is not, like the Rambam says. So, you know, Rambam clearly, Maimonides clearly states that he doesn't consider that when a fish catches a specific worm, that that's providence. That God, well, it's definitely, there's natural law. There's definitely the laws that God put into effect. But that brings us to an important point, that what do we say a law is? And I put the first quote in the email of Jeremiah 33:25, where God refers clearly to laws that he created, the laws of heaven and earth. So how do we define the law, as opposed to God doing something by his will every single moment for every single creation. So is it not that there is a behavior that's given to certain species, and that now controls it? Isn't that what we say law is, as opposed to saying that you wouldn't say that there's a law in terms of the actions that I do during the day, because I'm deciding every single moment what I want to do. But
that brings up.
But if you drop a rock into water and it sinks to the bottom, you do it every single time. So now you say there's a certain law of density and weight and motion, because you see it's repeating constantly. So to say this, to say it's a law, for God Himself to call it a law, means that He's not willing that at every single moment. Jim, you had a question?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it sparked a thought that then it actually sort of must be that way, because if it were just that God were doing it all the time, then we wouldn't have any sort of predictability in the world, and we wouldn't know how to act in it. Perhaps next time He makes, the worm eat the fish.
Right.
So we'd have no predictability.
And He wants us to know the certain constancy, that the way you plant and irrigate, all these things are proper ways for things to grow. You don't put marbles on your field. You put water on your field, and you see it constantly works that way. So the first thing I just want to point to is the fact that God Himself refers to something called laws. But that's just something to take note of in terms of our conversation about. What is it that he's willing directly, or what is something which is following set patterns? And the truth is, isn't it a greater praise to God? For example, what we, I don't know if I was talking with you guys or someone else this week regarding, it was somebody else this week, it was regarding miracles. And how it's not something which God has to step in at that moment, because of course God is above time. Maimonides says God created time, so He's not bound by time. So He doesn't have to wait for a certain moment, so to speak, in order to split the sea or bring the frogs or the hail in Egypt. Like Maimonides says, that these were all programmed into the substances. We did talk about this, didn't we?
Yes, Rabbi.
Yeah. So that's in Ethics of the Fathers, Chapter 5, and it's the 6th Mishnah. And he says that there are 10 things that were created at sunset on the primordial Friday. But he says, don't think that these are the only miracles. And he's talking about miracles that were created at the sunset, just before God completed, before He concluded His act of creation of the 6 days, or you should really say 6 epochs. So He created 10, or some say 14, miracles at that last moment before sunset, whereas all other miracles were created in their respective day. So when He created the water, He built into it that it should split. And when He created when He created frogs, when He created the frogs on the 6th day, so He built into it that there should be a certain swarm in Egypt that should unfold naturally in the future. Okay, but what's interesting, first of all, is that you see that it's built in. So what was my mind telling you is that He's not acting at that moment. So that's one thing. It's built into the very creation. And that means that there's something which He doesn't have to do later on. So that addresses, I think, directly what we're talking about. And but additionally, what it shows you is, why is there a distinction between these 10 things that He did at sunset as opposed to all the other miracles? So we may have touched on it, but for example, we talked about when God created rock on the first day. So He created heavens and earth. So earth means that He created the substance of earth, soil, rock, whatever. But He didn't create the rock that gave forth water miraculously, Miriam as well. So that was created just before sunset. But why didn't he create that miracle like he did all other miracles? Why didn't he embed it in the nature of rock when he first created rock on the first day? You see, I think it's showing you that that couldn't be done. And that, don't think of that as a limitation of God, but think of it like this, that when, if God's creating rock, and we talked about this, that it has to be something which is dry, which is solid, that it can support civilizations and buildings, that people can live on the earth. If at the moment that God brought rock into existence, it already had the properties at its inception, that it had water inside of it, then it wouldn't be something sturdy enough to build the entire universe. So that's why that miracle and a few others had to be subsequent. Meaning matter had to come into existence with certain properties. That was by definition, rock has to be a hard thing. So therefore it had to come into existence as a solid, dry, cohesive entity. Subsequent to that, then he could take a specific rock and he could build into it at right before sunset, he could build into it a certain particular property in that rock. But it's not in the species of rock. When God brought the species into existence, it had to have certain properties for his grand plan. But due to his kindness, he makes concessions for man, and therefore he tweaked creation just before everything was set. And that's what it means, sunset. Just before he concluded all of creation, he built in a few more things that were necessary for man's existence. Okay? And that also, part of that was the tablets. Meaning not only physical properties, but something which contained very instructional properties. So the tablets also that God gave Moses in Sinai were made at that moment too. But in general, when sapphire, because that's what the tablets were made from, they were made from sapphire. So sapphire doesn't have letters inside of it. That's not the property of sapphire. There may be, you know, fissures, there may be certain grain that runs through these types of gems, you know, certain type of crystalline structures, but there's no letters in it. So that's why after he let rock come in, or stone or gemstones come into existence in a certain way, subsequent to that, then he takes two of them and then builds into it a certain natural appearance of letters. But that's subsequent to how the rock had to come into existence to begin with. So you see, the point of stressing is that he couldn't do certain things. And it's not a limitation. But once one property is set up, or once there was a need to have rock being a solid thing, that was important for all of mankind. But then there was one time in history, for 40 years, where the Jews would need water. And he saw in his wisdom that this is how the water should be delivered. So that had to be a subsequent tweak in the actual nature of a specific rock, but not in the very design of rock. That couldn't be done, because then the whole world wouldn't be stable if rock by nature was moist. You see what I'm saying?
Rabbi, it seems like you're bringing proof for the idea that God had to put certain boundaries on things that he created. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Yes, there had to be certain boundaries, that's right.
Okay. I have no issue with that, but that, you may be headed somewhere. I wasn't thinking that was the issue that we were at odds about in the email exchange.
No, I think this is related. Again, I'm more talking it out than presenting a conclusive type of a response to our discussion.
Okay.
I was still thinking it through last night and this morning, and I had some notes. I want to bring it out, and we'll see if we can, see what the relationship. I mean, I asked myself certain things too, like in terms of that there's a chapter in the Guide that talks about certain impossibilities are not attributed to God. We don't say that God does the impossible. God can't make something a circle and a square simultaneously. That's an impossibility. And that's not a limitation, my God. But that's how reality has a truth. So it can't be a truth and a false simultaneously. I mean, you can't say it's true, it's a square, and also it's false, it's a square. So this just, this happens to be reflective of the eternal nature of a truth. Truth is something which, by definition, is consistent. It's eternal. There's a lot of, I think, very fundamental ideas that come into this whole conversation. So I apologize for not necessarily having them in the right order, or, you know, as articulated as I would have liked, but it's not a simple thing. But I think we can, you know, what I want to do is bring out more of how that, you know, the point, again, keeping a focus on the point that certain things may just be not directly God's will. And again, Doug, you had a question. Well, how do you determine which are and which are not? I'll get to that. I think we may be able to touch on that too. Can we set up some parameters by which we can follow, you know, guidelines to determine what is it that we can really say is God's will, and what is it that's not necessarily God's will, or definitely isn't God's will? So we'll see if we can come up with some rules for that as well. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Sure, sure. And I appreciate your question. You emailed me. It was good. It really helps clarify, you know, the whole thing. Okay, so that's one thing. So again, so God definitely says that there's something called laws. That's Jeremiah 33:25. All right, so God refers to it as...
Can I ask a side question on that?
Go ahead.
In my translation, it says, God says, as certainly as I have established my covenant with day and night, the laws of heaven and earth, so I will not reject the children of Israel, my servant David. Is that an accurate translation? And if so, my question is, do we have any knowledge about what the covenant with day and night is?
No, it just means the laws of nature, that that's a set, they're set. That's something which is not going to cease.
Okay, not unlike the use of the word covenant with the Jews or covenant with Noah.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good translation there, because what he's trying to show the people is that he's not just as day and night is something which people see is constant. So he's trying to use that as an insurance policy that he gives to the Jews as well. That same, you know, unbreaking system is what I'm going to have with you too.
Okay, thank you.
All right. That's, pull it out again.
Part of my reason for asking the question is I had always thought that covenants existed between God and people, and I'd never heard the term, I think, used in that fashion. So.
Right. According to the Aramaic, the Targum, so it says, just like it is not possible that I would nullify the sustaining properties that I made with day and night, so also the laws of the heavens and earth will not rest. All right. Let's see the other commentaries on that. Yeah, there, the first word he does use the word bris, but then he changes to chok, meaning a statute. And in connection with the earth, it's something which is continuous. And that's what the law, a law, is considered chok also.
Okay, thank you.
I just had a little problem on the screen. Give me one sec. Yeah, I mean, the rabbis talk about it as well, I believe, that they refer to the two providences, specific providence and general providence. And the general providence is what is referred to by nature. Now, next point. Okay. Next point is, let's take an example. I had the example of, let's say, the spinning spheres, the Earth, for example. So, God's will is that there should be, and I'm keeping the umbrella idea about will, is that primarily, it's God's will extends to the beings that can appreciate God. I mean, a rock in and of itself has no purpose. There's no realization of God, so that it would not have a purpose. Had it not been that an intelligent being could witness a rock and study it and see reflection of the Creator, okay? I mean, that should be almost intuitive that if something is inanimate, God has no need for the physical world. So the creation of it is going to be for something which can perceive it. Okay, now keeping that in mind, so when he creates the earth, so he created it that it should be primarily a cohesive entity, and it should be a sphere. Okay? So the fact that it exists, we would definitely say that the shape and the substance, or the very existence, is something which is more primary than its motion. Because the fact that it exists, existence is the most primary aspect of an object. I mean, wouldn't we say that? That'd be the first step. Existence is the most central, that something has existence. That's the most primary property of something. And then we'd look at its form and its nature as next in line in terms of importance. So what do we see? We see that the form is spherical, and that it's a cohesive solid whole. Now once you put those two together, and then you bring motion into the picture, so do you have to make a new law that the equator should move? Let's say it's rotating on its axis. We know the Earth rotates on an axis. Now, let's put a point on the equator and put another point at the Arctic Circle, right in the center. So what you'll find out is that in one complete rotation of 360 degrees, the point that's on the equator is moving at tremendous speed, while the point at the Arctic Circle is moving quite slow relative to the equator. Isn't that true? Because the equator, there in one rotation, it has to go about 25,000 miles. Whereas the point at the Arctic Circle, if you have the perfect point, it's basically just moving, it's actually rotating, and it's just going a centimeter maybe, or a millimeter, even smaller. So compare, in the amount of time, in one 24-hour period, the speed of the that dot, that point on the equator, is going 1,000 miles an hour, about. Whereas the dot that's on the Arctic Circle is barely moving. We'd agree with that. Those are the facts, right?
Yes, agreed.
Right, that's just the facts. But you wouldn't have to say that God would have to make that so as a separate rule, because once he created something spherical, and it's a cohesive unit, and it rotates on the axis, so by definition, that is what's going to take place. Isn't that true?
Rabbi, but that's because it's not a property of matter, but it's a logical property.
But it's a truth. I mean, we can witness it and we see it's a truth, isn't it?
It is true.
It is a truth. I mean, we definitely see the relative speeds is a great disparity. But you wouldn't have to say, now would you say God had to create that rule that points on the equator will move faster than points on the close to the axis at the top? Or would you say no, that's just a natural result of a spherical shape that rotates, it's a cohesive unit and it's spherical and it rotates on the axis. Wouldn't that just be a result of that?
I would argue that's inherent. I mean, that would sort of be like saying, well, if God created a sphere, then it's just an accidental result that it has a curved edge.
No, that's what sphere is. That's saying the same thing.
Right. That's what I'm saying, though, about this. I mean, you're taking a property of the sphere that we observe,
right,
and saying, oh, it's accidental, whereas the shape of the sphere was intentional. And the struggle I have here is that if something has a property, for us to say, well, this part was intentional, but this part was accidental, like God didn't know or God didn't need to.
No, we're not saying he didn't know. We're saying that it wasn't a primary will, meaning we'll separate between his will to what was just a natural result.
Okay, so let me carry this point a little further then.
Okay.
Let's suppose that somewhere in the course of history, for some righteous person, that distinction that you just made between the 25,000 miles in a day and the centimeter in a day, somehow that makes a difference for that righteous person. You know, it affects their life in some way. So then would we say, well, God, that was an accidental result, or that in his, you know, divine wisdom, God created that aspect of a sphere, you know, when he created the sphere?
I wouldn't go that far. It just doesn't appeal. As being, it's not something I could prove one way or the other, because I don't know what God's intent is in that specific case. So I think if we just keep to the point, and I see what you're saying too, that, well, it's really just saying the same thing in different words. The speed is just a result of the curvature. So it's not even a second thing, is like what you're trying to say. You're saying two things.
Right.
You're saying, first of all, the speed is just, it's not even, I'm making it into a whole second thing, when really it's not. Like you were saying, Jim, it's just logic. It's not, in terms of reality, that was part of the design of a curve. When you have curve and you have motion, that's just an accidental thing. I hear you're saying, it's a good point. Maybe it's one, it can't be separated, maybe.
Yeah, I may be jumping ahead too far in our discussion, so stop me if I am, but I'm also thinking, if it's fair to say that God's will is reality, that those are synonymous, and I'm kind of leaving out the free will of man for the moment,
right,
then wouldn't we say that everything in creation is a result of his will? And I couldn't necessarily say that a shadow was more important than a bear, because it's all part of what he created.
Right. Right. The question is, though, not let's separate between what he created and events that took place, because that was our original question. The event of this leaf and the angle that is falling right now off a tree somewhere in the Amazon jungle, where there's like no human beings for thousands of miles, whatever, would that be considered will? In terms of creation, I think it's easier to say, well, you see all the different properties, you definitely have to say that that there's a will in terms of, but again, that could still be in terms of the species, like Rambam says. Rambam says that God's will extends just to the species, not to the individual members. But there must be, see, he explains though his view. He explains that his providence only emanates from an intelligent being, meaning God, to an intelligent being, meaning man. Because that's the property of providence. So it has to relate two things of like natures. But providence over a rock, it's providence is something which is of a high nature, and the rock is just a brute piece of elements, of combined elements. So Brahman, you know, gives a reason why he says that.
So it sounds like the question at issue is, I mean, I don't think any of us argue that God created all the things that led up to the leaf falling.
Right.
And we wouldn't probably argue that God didn't know the leaf was going to fall.
Right.
But the question is then, what is God's will and God's providence, and how far does that extend?
Well, it seems that, you know, the will is going to the behavior, the existence, and the natures of all physical creations. That they exist, that they have properties, and that they behave a certain way. Now, in terms of their continued, and then they have those properties, those laws are governing it from that point forward. But then God's will step in and maybe make deviations in nature for the sake of, for a concession to man, like we talked about the miracles. If you look at the last thing I wrote, the rules, because we're asking what evidence would be used to support that certain results are irrelevant to God's plan, and if so, which ones are they? What rules might we follow? So I was thinking, again, loosely, I'm just talking loosely, that we talked earlier, we touched on the fact of what would increase awareness of God in intelligent beings. The truth is, you don't have to say the word intelligent beings, because that's implicit when you say what would increase the awareness of God. So that's only talking about intelligent beings. So that's, and we said, I think it's also, just to reiterate that, a rock doesn't exist for itself. So that, if we could see where things affect man, so that's something which we would say is of greater relevance. But the angle of leaves falling in the jungle don't seem to matter at all in terms of anywhere. The angles of leaves falling anywhere don't seem to be relevant in terms of just that there should be gravity. There should be the fact that trees, that the leaves fall down. That exists. That's something. But the angles and all, that's just a result of wind and weight and so on and so forth. So we don't have to say that in that specific case that God is willing this leaf to fall at that angle at this point, because that's not going to give anything more in terms of appreciation of the Creator. So if we look at appreciation of the Creator as a rule, that might be a good guide for us to say when and where. Now, it's no proof against what you're saying, Doug, your position. Well, God knows everything, so what's the separate between the fact that He knows that it's going to happen? And it's a direct domino effect, so why don't we just say it's God's will? In a certain sense, yes. If we look at it just in terms of human terms, which is all we really have, so what is it that's vital to God? What's important? There definitely are, you know, ranges of importance in terms of the laws, and what's more important, what's less important. So that exists in other areas as well. What is of greater gravity in terms of God's concern of mankind? So I'd say that's number one. And number two, we can maybe look at in terms of the order of creation. What came subsequent? So again, perhaps I'm wrong when I said my example before, that the earth should be a solid, cohesive sphere, and there should be motion. So if I look at the speed of a point on the equator as opposed to the Arctic Circle, so then that's subsequent. So that might be less relevance. Because what's really relevant is that the Earth exists, the existence of the Earth, and that it has a solid, cohesive property so that it can tolerate the humankind. So just loosely I'm speaking here in terms of what rules or what guidelines we might look at. I'm sure that, for example, there should be sun, and there should be the fact that certain objects, many objects that God made, are opaque. So if you take an opaque object and you put it in front of the beam of the sun, it casts a shadow. Now, if you start chipping away at the shape of that rock that you put in front of the sun, of course the shadow is going to change too. But that's subsequent. And the shape of the shadow is not so relevant also in terms of man's appreciation of God. The fact that man recognizes a thing called sun and shadow and opacity, that is more primary. That came first. So I think these two, my intuition tells me that these two are very good guidelines. Well, let me hear what you have to say.
Well, I was thinking about the leaf in the Amazon and all the factors at that moment that affect how it falls. And then if I said, okay, what caused it to fall? Well, because it aged. What caused it to age? Well, because of this system that, you know, carries nutrients and, you know, something happened. And if I go back, I'll get back to the creator who created the earth and then put vegetation on it. And then there's probably a gazillion trillion little causes and effects that occurred down to the point where that leaf falls. So if we say that it seems like that we're making a distinction that at some point in that continuum, because we would probably clearly say that it was God's will that the earth be created, somewhere in that continuum it became like less important or not so critical to him.
Well, that's the laws of nature. You used the word system yourself just now when you were describing this. You said there's some system.
Right.
All right, so that system means to say that God created something which can now operate, just like he created human beings that can be autonomous. Right? That's a very good proof. The fact that we have free will means we're autonomous. So that's a reality. He can do that. So what's the difference if it's a human being or it's a system of nature? I think that might be a very good proof to what we're looking for.
Well, okay, let me then think through again, like out loud. So if I say then, okay, God's will was to create the earth with that system, then it had to be God's will that particular leaf dropped, because he created all the causes and effects that caused that.
No, it's his will.
When Rambam talks about God does not concern himself with that, I wonder, is he making a distinction of talking about like a different layer or a different intervention level than the idea that I'm expressing, that just it was God's will that particular leaf would fall because he created all the causes and effects?
Well, again, I mean he's saying that you don't have the direct will. And the best way I can just talk about it is that God wills to talk to, you know, Adam's son, Cain, to try to prevent him from killing his brother. So there, he is intervening. But when the leaf falls, he's not intervening for that leaf. That's not something he's intervening for at that moment.
Okay, so that helps. Now let me use another example. The one that's been shared with me, I think Rabbi Moskowitz has brought it up it's just a illustration of what God's providence might do. Righteous person walks through a forest, going through a path. Down at the other end of the forest, there's a lion sitting there waiting, and God's providence might intervene and cause a deer to run past the lion to distract the lion, which chases after the deer, so that the righteous person could get all the way through the forest unharmed. Okay?
Yep.
Now, is that an intervention in the moment, or is that also something that would have been sort of included in the creation, kind of like those 10 things, and built into the creation at the very beginning? In other words, did God at that moment step in and like tweak that deer to go running, or did God see from the beginning all those causes and effects that would lead up to that situation? And maybe this is just a semantic, but I'm curious. It's kind of the question of whether God's intervention is unique and sort of outside the normal laws of nature at that moment when it occurs.
Well, again, God is not working in time. So that's why Rambam says that everything was built in. And if that was a deviation of nature, that would be built in as well. So when God created the universe, everything, the voice that emanated between the cherubs to speak to Moses, all these things, every single thing. Of course, he had foreknowledge, and he knew exactly when and where and what should happen. So all that was built in. There's no reason to subsequently come in. There's no afterwards for God. So that wouldn't apply.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I think we're both seeing that as supportive of our respective points, so it could be we're saying exactly the same thing.
Right. But I think, again, that the idea of man having free will illustrates that God can create something which is autonomous and that it's not necessary for him to be involved. So that could be the same thing in terms of laws of nature. He creates a certain system that has certain behaviors, and it's designed in such a specific way, in such an exact way, that everything, all the species will be taken care of, and all the irrigation, and all the needs for precipitation, and temperature, and whatever. All these things are all taken care of, and it's all completed at the end of the sixth day. So you can have numerous autonomous systems, not just the free will of each individual. But natural law, too, can be autonomous. That's even more of an amazement. I'm not sure who gave the example, was Ricochet or somebody else, but if you look at two painters, one painter takes a painstaking, 6 months to create this beautiful illustration of canvas. Another one takes a giant roller and he arranges dabs of paint of different colors on different parts of this roller. All right? And then he then takes the roller and in one motion that took less than a split second, he just rolls the roller onto the canvas and the exact same painting appears as the guy who took 6 months. So who would you say is more ingenious? The one that has to tend to every single dot so when he's making the house, it looks the proper angle, the proper color. When the tree appears, he's got to use a different color and different types of strokes. Or would you say the person that he arranged everything at one moment, and then as the roller just rolled across, which is like the time, the unfolding of time, so the unrolling of the roller, things went perfectly into place and created a beautiful piece of art. So certainly you'd say that one is much more ingenious because everything was built in at the very moment when he created all the dabs, all of creation. And then as time unfolded and as that roller, unrolled across the canvas, same exact. So you see it, right? You see the metaphor. That could be much more impressive that God created everything in the beginning of creation, and then as time unfolds, everything is taken care of based on the way he arranged it in creation. And the intervention is not necessary. So just another angle to show more of an appreciation for how precise this could have been. It's like, it's mind-boggling for us to wrap our head around, but you talk about the creator of the universe. I mean, everything from molecular structure to galaxies that are billions of miles wide and the size of the sun. And it's just, overwhelms you.
Okay, then let me ask you a question, and it may not have an answer. So let the righteous guy walking through the forest and the lion waiting for him. So that was built in from the beginning, so that person is, maybe by their actions, there's a built-in part of the system that by their actions they will be protected. Let's take a wicked person that walks through the same forest where that intervention wouldn't have occurred. Well, it's not an intervention because it was built into the beginning. I'm trying to wrap my head around the idea of, is everything then that happens to a person, at least in one sense of the term, a result of God's will?
No, we read that in the Rambam. Certain people can be left up to chance. They could be like animals.
When Rambam talks about chance, do you think then he's talking about, I mean, I would argue that apart from man's free will, that truly is no chance, since all the causes and effects actually are known by Hashem.
All right, but we're going back in circles. We're going in circles. I'm saying that we talked earlier about the fact that it's nature, that God can set up a system. So a guy decides to go rock climbing by an active volcano. And he decides he's going to go in and in and in. He's stupid. He's not underneath any providence because he's putting his life at risk. So sure enough, he goes too far down and he gets burnt by the lava. That's not providence. Right? That's just natural law. God's not willing that to happen. He's not willing the lava to burn this guy. Same thing with the guy in the forest. The guy who's wicked is in the forest, so he's not under any providence, right? Then it could be the same thing in terms of the tsunamis that are happening. That you have countries that are completely not following any true concept of God, so there's no providence whatsoever. So any type of natural catastrophe that's going to happen, that has to happen because of the design of the world, there's not going to be any intervention to save them. And again, this is based on Maimonides' description that you'll have certain people that, or even large groups of people that, like David said, they're like considered like beasts, that they're not doing anything in life worthy of God's intervention. So it's not God willing this to happen. All right?
Yeah, I wonder if it's the word intervention then that I'm hung up on, because it almost seems like since it was all design from the beginning, it's not an intervention in the sense that we think of it as, okay, like the police intervened in the conflict, which meant they came in at that moment and broke up what otherwise would have happened. But it's almost like there's a system like the laws of nature, such that if a person acts righteously, for example, the righteous guy and the lion, that alters or causes the world to respond to him in a certain way.
No, there's no need to say that. And there's no evidence of that. The world is operating a certain way. The guy's foolish. He goes repelling into a lava, active lava volcano. He's going to kill himself. There's no need for any changes in nature in order to that result should come to place. A guy's walking in the forest, and he's not taking care to be away from where the wild animals are. And he's foolish, he's putting himself at risk, and because of that he distances himself from God's intervention, even if perhaps he had intervention prior in life. But if he does something which is foolish, it may be at that point he's broken that tie, and those animals that are there are now going to see him. If they're hungry, they may attack him without any intervention. Again,
but the righteous guy walks through, okay, and the deer scares the lion away. That's not, if I understood what you're saying, that's not an intervention in the sense that God at that moment in time did something. It's that was
planned from creation. That was planned from creation.
Yes. Right, okay, it's planned from creation. And then it comes about as a result of the righteous man's life or actions or...
Yeah, because God knew that, he knew it at the outset. In creation, God knew this righteous man would be alive 7,000 years later, whatever.
So that in itself is a system in the same sense of what we call the laws of nature. It just is one where we don't directly see the cause and effect.
Yeah, it's good that you bring that up, because the system of providence, there's no change in God, Maimonides says. He gives an analogy. He says you can have fire, and then there's the effects of fire are different depending on the proximity of the object at a distance. So the object may be illuminated. If you draw it closer, it becomes warm. If you put it in the fire, it could change the shape of the object. The fire did not change in any of those instances. It was the proximity of the object to the fire. So also, man's proximity to God will have a different effect based on the design of how providence works. Providence isn't changing.
That's a great example.
Yeah.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Sure.
It's almost confusing, I think, using the word foreknowledge, because if God is outside of time, it's not even foreknowledge exactly.
You're right, you're right. But it's knowledge. He has absolute knowledge.
Right. And I think that's where some of the confusion comes in, because then Doug's question seems to reflect a temporal nature, whereas God, of course, isn't temporal, and that's where I think some of the confusion is coming in.
Okay, so that clarifies it, though. Your point there clarifies that. That it's not foreknowledge, but it's absolute knowledge.
Yeah, Jim, I agree. It's hard to think about these things outside of the concept of time.
Right, now in terms of, I think the one loose end is, Doug, your point about that. Well, what about, not events, but what about creation? So I think events we've got, you know, we've addressed that. Certain events take place. But what about God creates X and Y, so then do we say that Z that exists can be just a natural result? Or do you have to say that that is definitely God's will? That he has to will it that the sun exists. Then he has to will it that there's opaque objects. And then he wills it that... does he have to will it that a shadow changes when you change the shape of the object, or is that a natural result?
Well, it would seem, based on our conversation up till now, that we would say that that was all part of what was built in at creation.
Right, but you wouldn't have to say, meaning to say that the sun's behavior and the rock's behavior, now by definition, the shape of the shadow changes when you change the shape of the rock. You wouldn't have to have a third creation of rules of the change of contour of shadow. That you wouldn't need.
Yeah, I guess I would think of it as, okay, God created light, let's say, or the sun, and that part of that creation was the shadow, part and parcel of it, because if God didn't want the shadow, he could have created a sun without it.
Well, that's a separate conversation. Well, whether he could have made a sun, but, you know, but didn't have any shadow.
Well, and I may not be staying on point here, so stop me if I'm going off, but let me go back to then what Maimonides is saying. He was saying God's providence doesn't extend to a leaf falling. And in concept of what we're in accordance with what we just said, then I'm not certain what he means there by providence. Because the way I read it, it sounded like he was talking about sort of an in-time intervention. And you know, I would probably agree with him that God didn't at that moment say, okay, boom, that leaf falls, but that was, in fact, built into the creation from all the causes and effects. So I'm having a little bit of a hard time understanding where Rashi's coming from there.
Rashi?
I'm sorry, my mom.
Okay, all right. Well, think it through in terms of the idea of, you know, God can make an autonomous system where people have free will. So why can't he make autonomous systems that relate to other things as well? But then you wouldn't have to be forced to say that the leaf falling is something which is got to be traceable, this and that. It's just completely autonomous. The system is functioning. I think that the idea of...
Show why the leaf thing doesn't work, though. I mean, the pre-intervention or the poacher intervention of the deer distracting the lion. It means that if an evil person had come along, a deer might have come along, it might not have come along, the lion might have slept, just things would have just gone along naturally. God set up something that didn't adhere to the natural laws, and so a deer came along. He set it up from the beginning, but that's almost irrelevant. The fact is, things could have just gone a million ways. He set one particular way. He doesn't set each particular leaf unless it happens to be necessary for a righteous man for some reason.
Yeah, Jim, I think you've got a good point, because if we talk about, if I go back to the fire example, okay, closeness to God, kind of like closeness to the fire, changes events, then, and we call that divine providence, that system of how close you are to the Creator affects physical events, and that's divine providence, then a leaf can't get close to divine, to understanding of Hashem, and so would not fall under that. And I'm also noticing that what Maimonides, according to at least Friedlander's translation, says, for I do not believe that it is through the interference of divine providence that a certain leaf drops. So that then seems like it makes sense, because if we call the fire part, the getting closeness to God affecting you in the physical world, if that is divine providence, then the leaf couldn't do that. And that system apparently is what Maimonides is referring to as interference of divine providence. Does that seem reasonable?
You're saying that since the leaf is inanimate and it doesn't have the ability, but that doesn't preclude God from, in any specific case, like the rock. The rock is an inanimate thing, but divine providence somehow related to it that it gave water for 40 years in the desert. So it doesn't preclude.
Yeah, but that wasn't for the purpose of the rock or just all
right.
By itself.
Right.
That was for the Jewish people.
Right, exactly. Right, so the providence, that's one of the rules that I was laying down, that providence would really be something that would be relative to the increased appreciation of God by intelligent beings. If that's not at play, so what's the providence for?
Right, and the providence itself isn't an interference in the sense of the police interfering at that moment, but it is fact that, I'm thinking out loud here, I want to make sure I got this right, that the closer that an intellectual being gets in their knowledge and understanding of God, then events in the world around them start to change.
Yes.
Okay. I think I got it.
You're good.
That helps.
Good.
Right, so did we answer that last question that you had just raised?
All right, so think it over. We said a bit here. Let's I'm gonna wrap it up here, and we'll. I think we'll do is next week is to get back. Let's see, next week is. Yeah, next week's fine. So we'll think. Let's see if we'll go a little further into Kahelis, and we'll plug what we have here back into it. And we also touched on. Psalms 73, where King David talks about the same issue over here, and we'll see if we can get some, make some more headway. All right.
That sounds good. Thank you, Rabbi. It's very helpful.
My pleasure, everybody. Guys, have a good week, and we'll pick up same time next week.
Okay.
Okay.
Take care.
Take care, everybody.